From Atlanta, where we're due for another tornado, oh, any old minute now, it's Art Howard at Night. And now, here he is, America's favorite talk show host, Art Howard.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, it's taken me a month, a whole month, but I'm back with you again. Art Howard here on the scene, and I am so sorry that it's taken me another month. Here in the podcasting world, sometimes it takes a while to get guests and to get things together. I'm sorry about that. As heard on the Regular Guys show. That's right. This show was heard on the Regular Guys radio program, Rock 100.5 in Atlanta. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, we have fan stuff to talk about. That's right. We do. First of all, I received a $30 donation from a listener in North Carolina. I'm not kidding you. And not only did I get a donation from a listener in North Carolina, but he turns out to be a radio and audio production professional, because on his website, he's got a amazing studio. And outside the studio, he's got horses and a whole little ranch thing. So this guy's the real deal. And he hears something he likes in the Art Howard at Night program, so we thank him. And to add to that, we also have our first ever fan letter from Poland. I have it right here. Hear that? There it is. This comes from a listener in Poland named Jack. Now, you would think a guy in Poland would spell Jack J-A-C-K-Y-Z-Y-Z-C-Y-Z, but no, Jack spells his name J-A-C-K, the correct way, like we do in the United States. Thank you very much, Jack. Here's what Jack has to say. Hey, found out about your podcast from Mr. Doug Steele's website. Doug Steele was a guest a few episodes ago, and been checking it out ever since. Love it so far. I especially dig the ever-changing intro-outro by Brian Clark. It keeps you from auto-skipping that part of the show. Okay, hold up right there, Jack, because the theme music was composed by myself and played by myself. That is me playing guitar with the At Night band, and it should be listened to all the way through and enjoyed each and every time. Thank you. However, we continue. Going to take a listen to the 11th episode now. Keep them coming. Well, we will do that, Jack. Now, some of you might say, Jack's got to be pulling your leg. How do you know this guy is in Poland? Well, I know that because he used red ink. No, not really. They're over the red stuff now. Hey, welcome to the Sounds of Democracy, Poland. Right here. This is what the struggle was all about, getting to hear stuff like this. I hear them working to re-erect the Iron Curtain right now. But anyhow, we appreciate Jack and our listener in North Carolina. Fantastic. Now, as some of you may have heard firsthand or followed the links on the webpage, due to having Mr. Vinny Bucci of the Regular Guy Show as a guest last episode, we got mentioned on that show, just like I knew would happen. And by and large, this went off like a dream, just like I imagined it, because I was interested in Mr. Vinny Bucci himself, because he's a motivated go-getter, a guy trying to pursue his dreams here in my hometown of Atlanta, so I admire that. And also, I kind of thought, if I get him in here and talk to him for an hour and a half, some of it's going to, the regular guys are going to get wind of this, and they're going to play some clips and give me some free promotion. And if that isn't exactly what happened, very exciting. And I am not one to look gift horse in the mouth. I'm not looking askance at this at all. It's a fantastic thing. However, when I looked at the Ustream version of the show, I was just ecstatic. It was just like I had pictured it. Now, But the beginning of their conversation about this podcast was cut off. So then I went to their site and I listened and I found where the full version of it was an MP3. And there's some pieces here I feel like I have to address. Granted, it's a comedy show. They've got to create some drama. You know, if they just go in there and say Art Howard's a great guy, where's the humor in that? So they got to come up with something. I understand, but not everyone is showbiz savvy. And I have a feeling that one of these days I'm going to go sit down in a job interview and somebody's going to say, hey, I think I've heard of you. Were you that crazy guy they're talking about on the Regular Guy show one time? And, you know, I'm going to have to explain. So I figure, why don't I just get it out of the way and explain right here some of the comments. And here we go.
Situation. Seabass has some insight into this. What, how did this come
to pass?
He was
invited on, I guess, one of your super fans for years and years of you guys, the Regular Guys, Larry and Eric.
Super fan stalker, I don't know which, but Art Howard is a good individual.
Oh, thank you. That's Larry Wax of the Regular Guys speaking. Thank you. I am a good individual. Glad everyone recognizes it. Let me go way back, if I may, and discuss some of my history with this radio program. I'm going to go way back. In the late 90s, I was a young fella in my 20s working at a small AM radio station in a rural town in Georgia, hoping to make my mark in the radio business. And the gold standard for non-political talk radio, of course, was Howard Stern. We didn't have Howard Stern's radio show in Atlanta, so I followed him on a website called kingofallmedia.com, K-O-A-M.com. The headline on K-O-A-M.com one day was, Stern Moles Rat Out L.A.'s Regular Guys. And what it was Howard Stern had gotten in a feud with some Los Angeles radio show called the Regular Guys. And so I thought, well, these guys must be the big deal in L.A. if Howard Stern's taking time to fight with them. So I looked at listened to a couple of clips and just kind of shelved it in my mind. 6 months, a year later, 96 Rock here in Atlanta, big FM rock station, they were changing out morning shows on literally about a weekly basis. And then I hear they're going to bring in the Regular Guys show. Well, now I'm thinking, if these guys are anything like Howard Stern and they're coming on in Atlanta, this show is going to be either completely neutered or off the air entirely in 6 months. So I got up the day that they came on because I wanted to hear it hot off the stove. And I put in my cassette. I recorded when they came on. I was instantly, you know, I really enjoyed it, was very impressed with it. I called in to tell them, hey, radio in Atlanta has been pretty boring. You guys are really doing something. We appreciate it. And that was pretty much it. Working at the small AM station that I did, sometimes a couple of different times I ran into people who I thought would make good radio guests, but they were a little too hot for the small town I was operating out of. So I would send an email down to Larry Wax and say, hey, here's somebody I'd be curious to see what you guys did with them, you know, and maybe as a way of building a bridge, you know, trying to build my career. But and that was it for a long time. Let's move on. We got another clip here.
Very nice. A little creepy, a little too intense for a guy who has no affiliation with a major
He's
media.
A freelance writer.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. A freelance writer. Now, here's how this occurred. Excuse me. And this is when the story is going to get a little long, but very interesting. As I was doing my own radio show in this small rural town, to try to get my name out there, every week I would write up a press release on what I had been doing, and I would fax it down to the radio columnist at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, our big newspaper in Atlanta. And the columnist at that time was Miriam Longino. And I would also send it to a couple of the sort of Village Voice type alternative news weeklies. And Miriam Longino at the Atlanta Journal had told me that my press releases made her week oftentimes. Well, eventually I got laid off at this AM radio station. So I called Miriam Longino and I said, well, if you really enjoy my press releases, would you speak to your editor and ask them if I could write for the Atlanta Journal as a freelancer? And I heard back from her editor of the Living Entertainment section, and they said that I could, that they would look at my stories on spec, meaning I would write the story and send it to them, and then they would decide if they wanted to print it or not. And so I had to think of something to write about. I looked around at things I was interested in Atlanta, and one of them was the Regular Guys show. Now, at this time, the Regular Guys radio show was at the top of the ratings, but they were always saying, we will never be written about in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, no matter how high we climb in these ratings. And so, you know, I had this in. And so I thought, hey, this will be great. I could write a story on the Regular Guys. On one hand, they finally get this publicity in the Atlanta Journal that they've wanted, so they'll see what a go-getter I am making this happen for them. And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution will be impressed that they're going to have a well-written piece by a knowledgeable person, that being me. So it's just a win-win-win all the way around. So I wrote to Larry Wax, told him I had the host of the Regular Guys, told him I had this in, and he said, well, I'm going to put you in contact with our producer, and you can come down to the station and discuss this. And then I didn't hear anything for a week, so I followed up, and he said, well, we're going to do a remote out in Conyers. Just come out to that. So here's where it's going to get really interesting. So I went to this remote they were doing in Conyers, and one of the things, they were at this sports bar, and what they were going to do was they had some strippers there who were going to dance for these guys, and there was a contest to see which guy could keep from getting an erection the longest. Well, as the remote's going, there becomes word that there are plainclothes policemen from the Conyers Police Department in the audience. And now towards the end of the show, they do a segment that they call Ask the Regular Guys, and someone asked them what's the most unusual object they've ever made love to. And one of their guests said, well, I saw one of the police officers here making love to a French poodle. Well, their producer got on stage, started making the wrap-up sign. Larry Wax said, are we going to a commercial? And the producer said, no, that's just it. We're done. The 96 Rock banner was immediately snapped down from the ceiling. All the chairs were being folded up. And the show had been thrown off the air, on the air, with 15 minutes to go. And here I am, someone who was looking for a story to write. And boy, do I have a story now. So I run up to Larry Wax amidst the chaos, and I say, hey, I'm that guy who's been emailing you, and I think this is going to be a great thing for you. Because at this time, the template was for a rock radio show to get do something outrageous, get fired, and then you go to the next city and you wind up making $3 million. And they had just been talking about that on this show that morning, talking about the guy Mancow in Chicago, how he got to where he was. So I'm thinking this is going to be a big moment for them. In these days before cell phones, I actually had to borrow 50 cents from Larry Wax to go get on the payphone. And I called the editor at the Atlanta Journal. And I said, you're not going to believe this. The 96 Rock Morning Show has been thrown off the air on the air. And she said, what are they called? Here's the editor of the entertainment section at the newspaper has no idea what the name of the top FM morning rock show is. And this wasn't Miriam Longino. This is her editor saying this. So I had to fill her in. She said, well, since you're not an official employee of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, I can't really assign the story to you and tell you to go for it. Well, I thought, well, I'm not going to tell them that I'm going to do it and it's going to get printed and then have it rejected for some reason. So she said, well, here, just give them my number here at my desk and tell them I'll be here for the next 15 minutes. So I go back, I tell Larry Wax, I say, well, they tell me, since I don't officially work for the paper, that they can't give me the story. And he's kind of nodding like, yeah, I figured. And I said, however, here is the editor's phone number. She says, call her at her desk. And man, I felt good. I thought, now these guys are going to see I'm not some phony. I am hooking you up with the editor of the entertainment section at the major paper in town. So I thought this was great. Now, the thing is I get home and I remember that the whole idea here was I was going to have something to write about. Now, I don't have a story to write. Some guy who works for the Atlanta Journal's writing the story. So I got the idea that I could write a press release on this, since after all, I was an observer, and I send this out to all the radio industry trade publications, making note that I'm not affiliated with the 96 Rock Morning Show, Clear Channel, the bar, anything like that. So I'm sending this out, of course, partly because, you know, I like their show and I think I'm helping them, but also because I'm sitting here as an unemployed guy wanting to get into radio. This is a great opportunity to put my name on there and say, by the way, I'm trying to get into voiceovers, broadcasting, please visit my website and see my samples. So I put that on there. And in fact, one of the major trade publications said, hey, I see you're trying to do voiceovers. How about if you get any other radio news down there in Atlanta, you let us know and we'll put a free quarter page panel in advertising your voiceovers. Great. This is what I was looking for. This is that was great stuff. So this got publicized everywhere. One of these guys told me they had actually forwarded my press release on to Howard Stern. I said Howard Stern actually read some of this on the air and talked about it. So, you know, it was very exciting. And it turned out that the reason the police had shown up was because having these women dance around in their G-strings trying to get these guys aroused with light contact. Turned out that was illegal. That's called masturbation for hire. That's why the police had shown up. As for why the show actually got shut down and thrown out of the bar on the air, that was the club owner, because the guy who owns a bar is nervous that he's got a bunch of the city police in his bar at 9:30 in the morning. So that's what happened with that. We thought we had the story of the uptight local police try to shut down the rock and roll morning show, but it wasn't quite that kind of story. And let's see. However, there's more quotes here. What else do they have to say? Let me get it back up here on the old laptop.
And the regular guy's tree of life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, Vinny, he approached you. You did an interview with him. How did he approach you?
Yes. Well, he sent me a message on Twitter asking me to be a part of it. And then later on that night... Part of the podcast, right. Yes.
Yeah, and he has the second most listened to podcast behind Vinny.
That's what he told me. He said it was... That's how he pitched it to me. It was kind of like a number one podcaster meets the number two podcaster right. Rising.
I think he's like number 10.
I think I'm amazed that the idea was pitched. Anybody ever asked me to be on a podcast? They go, hey, I have a podcast. You want to be on? Yeah, okay.
No, it's a pitch.
The whole pitch.
It wasn't great.
You see, you're number one, I'm number two, and the whole...
we should do this.
I put a lot of energy.
I guess either way, but I guess he felt he had to pitch it to me for me to accept.
Gotcha.
Okay, that was not a pitch. I was making a little joke here. Vinny Bucci, who was my guest, he does a podcast called The Boochcast, and they always refer to him as Atlanta's number one podcaster. So, I don't know this guy. I'm trying to introduce myself to explain what I'm doing. So, just as a little joke, I say, hello, I am Atlanta's number two podcaster and quickly rising. I'd like to do an interview with you about your comedy. That was not a pitch. That was just making a little joke. But not everybody gets my little jokes, as is verified by my download statistics. And here's my favorite part of the whole conversation.
Well, I think as a stalker, he's a good kind in that he got the drift. I don't need to be, these guys don't need me in their lives, but right. I do have access through some underling.
Okay. The guy speaking here, his name is, they call him Seabass. And that's a great theory that Seabass has about why I just kind of faded out of the scene there. Truth is that the reason is that they put somebody like Seabass on the show, which is like radio kryptonite. I mean, you might as well run a promo saying, please stop listening. And it would, you know, get the same message across and be more cost effective than having this guy on the staff. I mean, I would, from what I understand, I think radio stations have marketers who do audience surveys to find out if these personalities are going over. Surely I would think the Seabass guy would be filtered out with his, I go to Georgia Tech and I'm a member of Mensa. I'm much smarter than everyone in the audience, but I don't know. He's still there. But of course, I'm only sort of kidding, Seabass. No, but about 2003, I stopped all these activities because also, I should mention, I got several articles printed on the Dunham's radio show that used to be on the old Z93. I did get them in Creative Loafing and a music magazine called Relics and so on. Anyhow, but I stopped chasing all this radio and even writing stuff around. Because by that point, I was into my early 30s, and I thought, you know, maybe my big dreams didn't happen. So I figured, well, I'll just go do a regular job and forget it. So that is why I wasn't heard from for a long time. Not that, you know, that I was taking clues or something. As a matter of fact, speaking of that, when after this show broadcast, who's the first person to hit the like button on Facebook for the Art Howard at Night podcast but Mr. Larry Wax himself? That's right. Go take a look. That's right. Larry Wax of the Regular Guys has hit the like button on Facebook for the Art Howard at Night show. But anyways, I digress. That was a rather lengthy story, but I hope you enjoyed it. And, you know, you've always got the skip button there if you didn't enjoy it. But you're going to enjoy what's coming up, because this show has, for all of its episodes so far, it's been a sausage party. Been nothing but a bunch of guys sitting around talking. Well, we change that today. Today's guest from HardRockChick.com is Hard Rock Chick. And for all of my fellow middle-aged 30 and 40-something guys who don't really know, who don't know what music's come out since Motley Crue, Hard Rock Chick's going to tell us, and she's going to do that right here, right after this, and I thank you so very much for being here.
Well, hey there, Phil. What do you say, Frankie? Say, Phil, you like movies, don't you? What are you, some kind of wise guy? What kind of palooka don't like movies? Well, have I got a podcast for you. Yeah? Yeah. It's called Seventh Row Center, see? It's hosted by a guy named Alex the Movie Guy. He talks about movies, the movie-going experience, and like that, see? Say, this character ain't one of them critics, is he? Oh, no. He's a regular Joe, like me and you. He just loves movies, that's all. Well, what do you know? Say, where can I find Seventh Row Center? Oh, that's easy. Just go to SeventhRowCenter.com. Well, what do you know? Say, Frank. Yeah, Phil? What's a podcast? No! Oh!
SeventhRowCenter.com.
And welcome back. And I know a lot of my listeners, they're a lot like me. You grew up loving hard rock music, maybe a little heavy metal also. But the fact is that now you're in your late 30s, early 40s, you're old. You're old. I'm old. We're all old. We don't know what in the heck's going on. However, today, to help us out and to help us old people seem somewhat hip, we have with us an authority on contemporary modern hard rock and heavy metal. We have Hard Rock Chick. Here she is. Say hello. Welcome.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. The crowd goes wild. Welcome to the program.
Awesome.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing, and of course you have a real name, but you know what? I think it's kind of like Superman had a real name, but was
nobody
he Clark Kent? Or,
exactly.
Right. Was he Clark Kent or was he Superman? I think he was really Superman, and it was the Clark Kent was the, you know, the fake guy, you know?
Exactly.
So just like Superman, you're Hard Rock Chick. That's what I say.
Awesome. I like that analogy.
Yeah, well, thank you. Here is my first question, and I know this is, might possibly sound somewhat sexist, but here's another analogy. Yeah, I know. Excuse me. But now, back in the 80s, when I was a young man, women went to see, it was not uncommon at all for women to go see bands like Van Halen, Motley Crue, because these bands had very studly lead singers. They would do a little piano ballad that involved love, that kind of appealed to the ladies. These days, though, since Nirvana and Metallica and Slayer and all those kind of bands, hard rock bands don't have this kind of softness. They go out of their way to be ugly. And now, so when I watch I don't know, when I watch TV, it looks like all the women are at the shows for Jason Mraz or, you know, Dave Matthews or John Mayer. They want to hear some of that kind of stuff. Yet you are Hard Rock Chick. Was that a long enough setup for this question? So,
well, I think that, you know, I'm not alone for sure. There's definitely a growing population of women at these kinds of shows. You know, yeah, there are definitely less women maybe back in the 80s, but, you know, I think that I'm drawn to that type of music because it's just something artistically that I like, and I'm not scared by the appearance of the guys in it. You know, I don't particularly like to go see men that maybe have better makeup application skills than I do. So yeah, that's kind of, you know, I don't feel alone at the shows, if that's kind of what you're asking.
Derek, so the women back then in the 80s, they were, I guess we could safely say, they were somewhat shallow, maybe. Or maybe I'm generalizing again, but, you know, maybe they were there because they thought the guy from White Lion was a big stud. But so what we're learning here is Hard Rock Chick is deeper than that. She's there for the music, man.
Yes, I am definitely there for the music. I mean, I write a lot about the stage performance, so I'm definitely into appearance, but not on like a shallow level, more as an expression of the music, I think, and kind of making it all congeal into like a performance art or something for the audience.
See, people are deep these days. It's not like the 80s. You could throw a burlap bag over the singer's head. It would make no difference to Hard Rock Chick. She's listening. She could walk him blindfolded.
I've only seen people perform with burlap sacks over their heads.
Come to think of it, that's true. Yeah. Come to think of it, what Brett Hines from Mastodon, his old band Fiends Without a Face, that was kind of the whole theme of what they were doing there.
Exactly.
Well, so take us back. Now, starting this website, which has been going on since 2007, I believe.
Yep.
Wow. God, I think that was like 5 years ago. What led you to going from just being a passive listener, enjoying a good album or MP3, to where you wanted to write about it and be involved and do this site? What instigated that?
Well, I guess the true instigation was my ex-boyfriend. He was or is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, and so he's very like tech savvy guy, and he knew that I loved going to concerts, and I just went to tons and tons, and he suggested to me that I should share my experience with people because the blogging thing was really relatively new still in 2007. Mm-hmm. I had a blog previously that was more of a personal and professional one, and I still didn't even feel like I knew what blogging was. So he helped me set it up, and I just started writing about everything I went to. And I think my first year of doing it, I covered like 50 something shows, and then by year two, I think I was up to like 100. So,
wow.
And it just kept growing and growing. And it stayed between like anywhere from like 90 to 120, I think, was my record. So,
wow. In a year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sometimes I go to more than one show in a day, so yeah.
See, that's one of those things where people will tell me, you know, which a few years ago I was going to, you know, shows like maybe once or twice a week. Seems like I still didn't ever hit 100 and something. People say, we need to get out more. Well, it's all relative, isn't it? I don't know if I've seen 150 something shows put together, but wow, that's quite impressive. Well, so you started doing the blog, and I suppose it was probably something simpler then, and maybe it was more just you're going out and saying, I went to see the show, and here's how I felt that it was. How did it develop into, who was the first act that you interviewed that you actually felt were sort of superstars or were very well known? How did you evolve into that?
That I interviewed?
Yeah.
I didn't actually start doing interviews until, well, like real legitimate ones, until probably 2 or 3 years into it. Mm-hmm. My first interviews were actually like I would send multiple bands MySpace messages. That's wow. Dated, right?
Yeah.
Asking like the same question, and then I would combine them all into a response. But yeah, I mean, when I started writing reviews of live shows, they were much more basic and like not going into a lot of detail. And slowly over time, they became more and more detailed, but they've always had more of a kind of a diary-esque feel to them, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They've never been objective. But back to the interviews. The first band that I interviewed that I thought was going somewhere, well, kind of like a tie between, I'd say there's three that I did in like 2009 that were really small bands at the time, and they've grown a lot, and that would be Evile, whose shirt I'm actually wearing, Black Breath, and Bison. Yeah.
Okay, that's a very manly sounding name.
Yeah.
It's kind of making me think they must dress up like the Marlboro man when they go out to play. They look like they're going to corral some cattle in their flannel shirts and cigarettes or something.
Not exactly, like, but yeah. They have a definite mastodon kind of feel going on.
Oh, there you go. See, I'm stuck back in the 80s with a lot of this. So that is what I find amazing. If I talk to someone anywhere from in their 20s, even into their mid-30s, if they say, yeah, I like hard rock, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, like Humble Pie or maybe Motley Crue. And then they're like, no, like Bullet for My Valentine. I'm like, who the hell is that? What?
Yeah.
I'm trying to, which probably that's like a 2002 name. Oh, sorry. I don't know. It still seems like a new one to
what,
me.
What, Bullet for My Valentine?
Yeah. Or are they more recent?
They're a little more recent than that.
Oh, thank God. Oh, so
I
just
consider them hard rock, though. I think they're more like lighter metal, I guess. I don't know.
Really? You would say that's lighter metal?
Yeah, it's their name that always trips people up because mm-hmm. It sounds very emo, but they're not an emo band. So.
They're not. I felt no emo coming off of that when I saw them. It was actually, to me, now it sounded more like what I would call thrash metal. Well, this is, this is something that fascinates me. One of the video interviews that I notice you have featured on your site is where you speak with Dillinger Escape Plan. I notice as I browse around the site, that's always there. And it's like you're really featuring it. I guess they're a bit pretty big deal. Now, I had seen them on Comcast on the on-demand thing, a Guitar World interview with them. And so then I went to your site and I saw that interview. I thought, you know, I'm going to give Dillinger Escape Plan a listen here because it sounds like people are into them. Hard Rock Chick has sold me on Dillinger Escape Plan.
Yes, that's what I like to hear.
So I said, let's take a listen. Now, as I'm listening, I'm kind of enjoying it. I'm kind of getting into it. But at some point, something began that I think it's what you call the screamo. Did I hear some screamo or the Cookie Monster or some one of those elements popped up?
You know, when you say the name screamo, I kind of get a twitch. So you can't associate that with Dillinger. But no, I know what you're talking about.
Well, they did the thing where the guy goes, wow, 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 well, whatever the hell that is. You know, and I know I sound like my own grandpa now, but it's like, I'm, I don't know. Can you explain to me as somebody who's, I swear to God, now I suddenly feel like Milton Berle interviewing Alice Cooper or something.
I've gone through this with many, many people.
Because it's like, I just, when the screamo element pops up, Opeth, well, that would be another band where I'd heard descriptions. I thought, let me check this out. It started off with this classical piano. The guy was really singing beautifully. I thought, oh, this is making me think of like No Quarter from Led Zeppelin. And all of a sudden he goes, blah, blah, blah. Like, how does anybody resist slamming the volume knob down when that happens?
You know? Well, okay. Both bands are definitely acquired tastes. With Dillinger, because I write about live bands, I had been hearing that they put on one of the best live shows around. And this was in like 2005, 2006. So I finally went to see them. I think it was 2007 or 2008, the first time. I tried listening to them first. And I was like, I don't think I could ever get into this. But I'm going to see what they're like live, because there's a lot of bands that I don't ever really listen to, but I love their live shows. So I went to see them, very small club in San Francisco where I was living at the time. And it blew my mind. Like, they're so chaotic and crazy and just have this energy that very few bands have today, where you feel like you might get hurt while you're at the show, or somebody's going to get hurt.
Oh, I love that.
And
sometimes if I can't go to a concert, I just go drive my car off a cliff. Say, God, this feels like I could get hurt. It's so, yeah.
There's a certain segment of us that just like that feeling of danger when we go out to concerts. I don't know what it is. But then it took me probably another year or two before I really got into appreciating their music. Mm-hmm. And I probably saw them live one or two other times that helped me kind of get there. But I'm wired differently. Like, sometimes I don't fall in love with albums until I see them perform live. So I just kind of gradually warmed up to them that way. Dillinger's most often considered mathcore, which is like very complicated time signatures and stuff that just doesn't make sense. So when you listen to it cold, not knowing anything about them or whatever, yeah, it doesn't sound good to your ears.
Right.
As far as it sounds like you're speaking mostly to the vocals, because you went into Opeth with that. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, 5-6 years ago, maybe a little more, if you told me that I would be predominantly listening to music with death metal Cookie Monster vocals, I would have been like, you're crazy.
So what would you have been into back then? John
Mayer?
Well,
no. I was more into like soulful vocals, or cleaner vocals, yeah. Where I understood what the person was saying or whatever.
Right, like Aerosmith back in the 70s doing You See Me Crying, a great outro song to, I believe that's on Toys in the Attic, or is that on Rocks? It's on one of those. That's some vocals right there.
Yeah, and I still listen to all of that. It's just that for whatever reason, you know, things that have gone on in my life or whatnot, I've really gotten into this whole subgenre,
right.
I guess.
Right, right. All right. I need to update, I guess. I don't know. So maybe if I get a Dillinger Escape Plan CD or MP3, you know, who's buying CDs these days? Not me. I wouldn't do that. But
start with their latest two albums. They have some slower songs that'll kind of get you worked into their sound.
Okay. And then I'll get used to the Screamo Cookie Monster, whatever you want to call that.
And then promise never to say Screamo when you talk about them again.
isn't that the same thing? Isn't that what they call it when they go, wah, wah, wah? And that, if it's like if you do it up high, it's Screamo, and if you do it down low.
I mean, I know what you're saying, but to me, that genre terminology evokes Warped Tour metal bands that I don't listen to, I guess, so.
Okay, well, I will not use...
We're splitting hairs here.
All right, well, see, this takes me back to when, a long time ago, when I was DJing at a small college radio station, and a guy put on some music, and I said, oh, you like this rave stuff? He said, this isn't rave, this is called jungle. I'm like, jungle?
Yeah.
What is it? He said, hear that keyboard sound there? That makes it jungle. It's like, house, jungle, acid, rave, it all, I don't know.
And now it's called dubstep, and that's everywhere.
Right, right. And someone told me there's something called Skrillex or something.
Yep.
Which sounds like skillet to me.
That's a very popular artist right now.
I felt somewhat young and hip when I started this interview, and I now feel 112. I mean, I swear to God, this is Milton Berle interviewing Janis Joplin, trying to get a hang on what's happening. What is it with the kids in the rock and roll? Elvis, can you explain him to me? I don't get it. I
love Elvis.
Yeah, right. Oh, see, I think people really need to go back and just look at a movie or anything from pre-1955 to understand the Elvis impact. People really don't get it. It was truly a different world fundamentally before Elvis came along. People just don't get it. But
I've been to Graceland twice in the past year. I'm a huge
really?
Fan.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, super cool. Oh, wow. That's super cool. Yeah. Well, now that you've been doing these interviews and that, well, I mean, you've been writing the blog and doing the concert reviews first and foremost, and then getting into doing the interviews and starting to make YouTube videos and such of your interviews. Do you feel like you're becoming a recognized figure? Of course, also with this interview, I'm sure this will, you know. Here comes the fame. Right. Absolutely. You know, right. You got the street cred now that you've talked to the guy who doesn't know Screamo from Emo. But, is it become now where, Holy Grail comes to town and they call you up and say, please, you got to come talk to us or this whole gig is for nothing?
No, it's not like that at all.
Well, would it hurt you to lie and pretend it was?
No, I mean, my site is really niche still. I do some bigger things, like I'm the rock blogger for the Grammys, which is the biggest thing that I do.
Oh, my God. Oh, that was a question I had. But go ahead.
We'll get to that in a minute. That's more of a very toned down version of me. But as far as like Hard Rock Chick itself, I mean, I definitely, it's slowly growing, and I wouldn't say that, like, I go to, mainly because I haven't really lived anywhere in the past 2 years. I've bounced around all over the place. It's not like I've been in one place long enough for me to, like, walk in a venue and people be like, oh, there's so-and-so, you know,
wow. So that's what I'm envisioning, going back to my 80s, early 90s roots again, is the old Headbangers Ball with Ricky Rockman, I think.
I used to watch that when I was a kid.
Right. See, I mean, everybody, I don't know, Ricky Rockman was an inspiration. Him and Lon M. Friend, when they used to do Friend at Large, I used to fantasize myself replacing Lon M. Friend in some way. Because I used to write about jam bands, and I did a little print zine and all this. So that's what, I imagine you climbing towards. I think if MTV had shows like Headbangers Ball, and if it was as strong now as it was then, I think, you know, you would certainly have some part in MTV, it seems like, by default.
That was my dream when I was a kid.
Right. Right now, it's like you don't even need MTV. Now people say, I want my MTV. Now people say, who cares about MTV? I don't watch
exactly.
That. You know, it's all that little orange girl. What's her name? Snoopy or Scoopy or Snooki.
Yeah.
There I go, being Milton Berle again.
I've never seen her before, but I know her name. That's the power of it.
Right. Yeah, but at the same time, have you purchased any product associated with her name? No. So it ultimately means nothing. So screw you, Snooki. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
But you're in Austin, which is definitely recognized as a music capital. What is the scene like there on the ground, especially for hard rock and metal in Austin? And what's the scene like there as far as hard rock goes?
It's pretty good. I've only like literally been living in Austin for 2 weeks. Technically,
wow.
But I've been in and out of here a lot over the past couple of years, and there are some great local metal bands that are getting some major U.S. tours. Ancient Wisdom just got off a tour with Ghost, which is, and Ghost is a pretty, I guess, up-and-coming metal act out of Sweden that they're about to tour with Opeth and Mastodon.
Ooh.
And let's see, there's several smaller metal bands here. Eagle Claw, Iron Age was my favorite, but I heard that they just broke up. And there's another band called The Roller. And it's a pretty supportive scene here. Like, I lived in San Francisco for 5 years, and that's where I started my site. And that's one thing I really noticed about this scene there, was that all the bands really support each other. And then I've spent a lot of time in LA, over the past couple of years. And there's some of that going on there, but there's definitely more of a like competitive thing going on. And
right.
And it's so big. The scene there is so big. It's always going to be fragmented to a certain degree.
Well, it's, and so that is something that you've noticed in your travels, that although a lot of people that I've spoken with before try to make the argument that, well, the internet's been a real leveler, and, you know, as long as you've got an internet connection, everybody's on a level playing field. But no, there's still geographic differences going city to city, right? And how different, just the general attitude of the town and especially the general mood of the local music scene.
I think there's always going to be that to a certain degree, because your setting has an effect on you and your music, you know, when you create it. But I think when it comes to consuming music, it's a little bit different effect on the scenes. Like, you know, I may live in Austin, but only go see touring acts because that's all I know. Like, because I listen to stuff, you know, that I find on the internet, and I don't only support bands that are playing, you know, in local venues that are from here.
Right. Right. It's like when I last visited Los Angeles in like 1999 or something, but when you go somewhere, when you go to Santa Monica and Hollywood, as soon as I was actually on the ground there, I realized it's really no surprise that somebody like a David Lee Roth or a band like the Red Hot Chili Peppers or No Doubt, that's where they come from. Because whereas Flea could come to Kansas City and he looks really technicolor and over the top, he could stand on Sunset Boulevard and he just blends into a mural on the side of a building, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would see that back in the late 80s, early 90s here in Atlanta. You'd see a lot of bands trying to pull a Sunset Strip, Motley Crue kind of act, and it's just not going to work here. I mean, that's why REM comes from here. This is all earth tones, laid back, slow. You know what I'm saying?
It's like, it's
REM couldn't sum this area up any better than they did. You know, there's a reason REM comes from here and Van Halen didn't. It's just two different universes entirely. Yeah. I'm actually interviewing Hard Rock Chick, not myself, but I like to get some opinions in there sometimes.
Well, I mean, to go along with that and what you're asking about, like, death metal vocals and that whole scene, and you go into, like, black metal, which is traditionally from Scandinavia, Norway in particular, but there are a lot of American bands that are picking up on that look and feel for their music, and I'm always very interested in, you know, do people perceive that as being authentic? Because that's a style of music that's normally European, but there are these, you know, there's a band from New Orleans called Goat Horror that has that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're doing really well, but it's kind of new for American bands to do that.
Well, I think what those people are trying to pull is they're trying to pull a Metallica, where James Hetfield said that, you know, they were sitting in Los Angeles and they saw the new wave of British heavy metal coming. Not a lot of people were necessarily going to the flea markets and buying these little obscure European releases, you know, or having a guy from Denmark in their band. So in 1981, you could go play a Diamond Head song and make people think it was original. But if bands are trying to do this in 2012, I'm sorry. In that instance, people can plug into the internet and say, oh, so you're doing with that band from the village of Glockdishnorsk from Iceland. You're just ripping them off, man. You know,
that's
not going to be obscure anymore. It's like they're all over Reverb Nation. You're a phony, man. You know.
Yeah, but it's working out for some of the bands, I think. And there's some that you see and you're like, no. But
right.
And I won't name names, but... yeah, Goat Horror does a good job.
Yeah. Oh, Goat Horror. Who doesn't love them? they're going to play them at the senior prom here at the local high school. It's going to be the class song.
I'm sure it is.
Jesus, I feel like a grandpa. But what was I thinking? Oh, well, now the thing is with these bands, we're talking about Ghost. I know our mutual friend Don writes about Graveyard. Mm-hmm. There's Goat Horror. All these bands are, in the past 15 or so years, everything pretty much post-Nirvana, Nine Inch Nails, Slayer, etc., everything's been very dark, angst-driven, moody. Is there any band out there bringing back that kind of rock and roll all night, party every day kind of vibe, or is that just lost and terminally unhip, or is there anyone out there flying the flag for that?
Well, I don't think it's lost. I think that's definitely out there. Let's see. Some bands that come to mind would be like, have you heard of Rival Sons? They're much more of like a classic rock. I don't know about the rock and roll night party every day vibe, but they're definitely more of like, you know, positive, less dark and scary lyrics.
I will look them up. Give us that name one more time.
Rival Sons. They're from LA.
Oh, Rival Sons. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard the name at least.
Mm-hmm. They're great. Who else do I listen to? It's hard for me because I'm just more drawn to the darker side, I guess. But
there you go.
Yeah, I know that it's definitely out there. It's just maybe not like as popular right now. And there's a lot of shit going on in our world, and I think that's why darker music is more appealing right now, because people are really in touch with their negative emotions these days, you know?
Yeah, well, that's true. But I don't know, Rival Sons, now you got me wanting to look that up, because I'm thinking maybe when Van Halen went on their tour, not that Kool and the Gang probably isn't doing a fine job as an opening act, maybe they could have got Rival Sons. Would have been something contemporary, but a little more in tune with the Van Halen vibe, possibly.
Yeah.
Well, now, so you like writing about the music, you're doing these interviews, you've got the webpage. Have you at some point been musical yourself? Do you play an instrument or sing? Ever pursued it from the performing angle?
I played the violin when I was younger.
Ooh, killer.
Not really.
Oh, trust me, it is. Oh, it all depends on what you do with it. Oh, God. Yeah.
It was fun, but, it was one of those things where my best friend, when I was playing, she like literally plays professionally now. So it was like every time I picked up the thing and she played next to me, I'd be like, I'm not better than her.
So, yeah.
Then gradually the violin started getting turned sideways and played like a guitar. So I picked up the guitar for a while.
Oh.
Played that for a couple of years, not very well. And then that eventually went away as well.
Really? So, did you ever form a band and go to downtown Austin and get on a stage on a Tuesday night and say, hey, everybody, check this out?
I did not. My more professional performance was as a dancer.
Wow.
I was a ballerina. So that's probably where a lot of my love of music came from, was being a dancer and listening and learning routines to music as a kid. I was a year and a half and was, heading towards doing it professionally until I was 16.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, what made you turn away from the world of dance?
Well, I was born in Houston, and when I was 13, we moved to a really small town that was kind of isolated, and it was too hard to keep up lessons and stuff like that.
Nothing but line dancing going on, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Hmm. Actually, polka. It was a Texas-German town, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I ended up just giving it up.
Yeah. So. You don't want to go to Juilliard and pull out a polka on them, because you're not going to make the audition.
No.
Probably.
I didn't want to turn into Black Swan, so.
Yeah. Oh, wow. But however, it turns out you didn't need a Juilliard in the world of dance, because you're going to the Grammys. I saw that on your site. How did this come up that you become, you say the Grammy blogger.
For rock music.
Oh, for rock. Well, still, you've got to be in some rare company there. How did that come about?
Well, I just Went to the Grammys a couple of weeks ago. That was my third time. So I think it was like around Thanksgiving a few years ago. I was contacted by someone at the Recording Academy, and I thought it was completely bogus. Like they wanted to send me press releases or something. And turns out they were coming up with a social media program, basically, around the Grammys. And they wanted a blogger in each genre. So they asked me to cover the rock genre. And I didn't even hesitate. And I said, of course I would. I basically don't really know how they found me or chose me beyond the fact that I know that I wasn't the first choice.
Oh, wow. So you didn't inquire? Oh, well, you inquired and they said, well, we asked somebody else. And you're like, okay, I don't want to know anything else.
Well, basically, I was told that because it is the Recording Academy and it's tries to keep a very positive outlook on everything, a lot of the bloggers in my genre, metal in particular, are very negative and snarky all the time. And even though they may be, you know, much bigger than me or better writers than me or whatever, the Recording Academy didn't want, you know, something with that kind of tone associated with them. Mm-hmm. So that's why I, you know, I'm not a true reviewer. I don't really ever write anything negative about a band. If I don't like it, I just say it's not for me. I don't really delve into that aspect of it. So,
you can pull a Simon Cowell on them and rip them apart. People love that. I'm gonna try that out. Do you feel like you have it somewhere within that you could just rip a band up, let them have it? Sometimes
I
love that.
I may have only done it one time with a local band in San Francisco where the performer was just like completely drunk and being retarded. So that's the only time I ever really pulled it out and like said, this has got to stop. But
that sounds like a band that deserved the highest praise. If you ask me, it's probably very... Jim Morrison did it, and he's seen as a hero. So why not the unknown guy in San Francisco?
Well, it came to the fact that they didn't have the skill to, you know, back it up. So
well, that's true.
Drunk and bad, that's just not good.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, drunken antics with no music behind it won't work. Yeah, you got to have Ray Manzarek back there keeping a steady pace while you stumble around and recite poetry or whatever's going on.
Exactly.
But so you got into the Grammys, and from what I was reading and what you wrote about it, you actually got to walk in ahead of Larry King and ahead. They said, Larry, we love you, but you're old news. Back of the line, Hard Rock Chicks, what's going on now? She knows who's screamo and who's not screamo, Larry. And Slash. You walked in ahead of Slash, put behind on the guest list.
That's just because I operate as press when I'm there. And it's very surreal. I cover a bunch of events throughout the week leading up to the awards. And so some of the events are pretty small and exclusive. And for instance, the one where I walked in front of Slash was the Clive Davis party, which was particularly interesting this year because Whitney Houston had died in the hotel where the party is at hours before I got there. Mm-hmm. So it was very somber.
Were you questioned at any point?
No, I was not questioned.
Oh, thank God. I don't know. I might seem like the nose ring, the black hair said, let's cover all bases. Can we have a word with you, miss? No, absolutely not. No, you didn't have nothing to do with that. Wow. And this just came out of the blue, and you don't even know exactly how it came about. Just the next thing you know, there you are at the Grammys.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I write pieces for their blog leading up to the show and cover events during Grammy week and then write a piece afterwards. And yeah, I've done it for 3 years and it keeps getting better. And this past year or a couple of weeks ago, beyond the writing part, we also use Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at our events that we're covering. And all the like social media monitoring services reported huge numbers for our efforts during the Grammys this past couple weeks ago. So we broke all sorts of records and, you know, instigating conversation about what was going on at the awards. So it's pretty cool to be a part of something like that.
Your blogging in particular, you feel, where they had more, where they have more hits, more visits, more interactions? How do they measure that?
Well, they measure interactions online through Twitter mainly, Facebook probably as well. Covering the rock category is a bit tricky because the Grammys are so pop focused. So my role is maybe not as prevalent as the pop blogger and the R&B and rap blogger and stuff like that. But still fun. I mean, Foo Fighters took everything this year, and I think they're a great band. So.
All right. Oddly enough, rock and roll not selling as well as rap, urban, hip-hop, and country these days for some reason. And really, what's his name there? Dave Grohl. I see that guy has collaborated with King Diamond. Okay, I'll let him do that. Now, he's also collaborated with Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones with Rush. He's working on a song with the guys from Rat. Is Dave Grohl legitimate? What's going on? Or is everybody hypnotized? What's happening?
You know, I wish that I could define it, because if I could, I would probably be a millionaire. But, I've never met him, but he seems like a super likable guy. And I think that's what it always comes down to. Working even marginally in the music industry for, a few years now, it's like you encounter a lot of really strange personality types. And
Right now.
Yes.
I thought so.
And I think, he's just probably the type of guy that everyone wants to work with because he's cool to hang out with. And that's probably what it comes down to.
He's just got a Forrest Gump-like story. He was in Nirvana for 6 months before they had a multi-platinum milestone album, and the next thing you know, he's in there jamming with Lemmy 20 years later and playing at Wembley with Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hats off to him. It's not exactly my bag, but hey, way to go, Dave Grohl.
Exactly.
But here's the one other thing I was wondering about. On your blog, we had mentioned Mastodon, I believe, earlier, from here in my hometown of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I believe, if I remember the entry right, you were seeing them, they were somewhere like the Rainbow or something in L.A., and somehow you wound up chipping a tooth or something.
Did Don tell you this story? How did you get this story?
No, you wrote it. Now look at that. I don't remember she wrote it. Apparently it was a really great night.
I had a very rock and roll night at the Rainbow. It was my goodbye party. I lived in L.A. for like 5 or 6 months last year, and it was my goodbye party. And long story short, there was some Jack Daniels involved. And one of my best girlfriends ended up like smashing into me and taking me down. And I just hit the edge of a table the right way and lost 2 almost whole teeth and part of another one.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow. And Britt Hines happened to be there. So.
One of the guys from Mastodon.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. You don't think it was Britt Hines himself who, you don't think he knocked you out and blamed it on your girlfriend, do you?
I wish I could tell people that that was the story, but he was way far away.
Oh, because I've heard he's kind of a aggressive guy, so it might have been him. I don't know. I think he ought to be questioned, maybe. But really, this was for your own personal going away party, and people from Mastodon show up to see you off, or did?
Oh, no, it was just a strange coincidence, really.
So you need to lose the humility and ramp this up. Some say, of course he came out. I'm leaving town. Are you kidding?
That's not something that would happen to me, no.
The whole show business A-list turned out to see me off. Why wouldn't they?
Well, I had friends and bands there that I respect, but no, he was not one of them.
Nikki Sixx was my party planner. He wept.
Yeah.
He was inconsolable as I got on the van and drove out of town. It was a whole turnabout.
Yeah.
Well, with all this activity going on, I mean, obviously this is growing from the point where you're just writing reviews and thinking about doing a blog to the point that now it's out of the blue, here comes the Grammys and you're walking in ahead of Slash. Where do you see all, do you have a definite plan for how you see all this coalescing and where it's going, or what do you plan to do with hardrockchick.com?
That's a great question. As of now, I'm just going to keep doing what I do and see how far it goes, I guess. You know, every year it grows a little bit. It's a very involved hobby of mine, so yeah, it would be great to actually have it be my full-time thing, but you know, as all of us bloggers know, it makes no money. It's actually the biggest expense I have in my life.
Oh, wow.
I am at some point when I get less busy planning to write a book that, goes into, it's a collection of stuff that I've written on Hard Rock Chick, kind of expanded, and also stuff, from my recent travels that basically all relates to the fact that I lost my mom to cancer about a year and a half ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay. And so my intention is to write something that's kind of like Eat, Pray, Love for the alternative girl.
Ah, well, there you go. Well, exactly, because, I mean, just following your passion so far has worked out and just grown and grown to the point that you're, you know, you're there on the... They're on the A-list at the Grammys. Can't top that. So, you know.
Thanks for making me sound good.
That sounds pretty exciting to me. I haven't heard from the Grammys. I think they have the wrong email address, or I was having some kind of server issues that day. Maybe next year.
Yeah.
I'll see you on the red carpet.
All right.
But anyhow, well, it sounds like it is just going fantastically for you, and we appreciate you being with us here today. Hard Rock Chick of HardRockChick.com. I urge everybody to go take a look.
Thanks.
There you go. Let me go applause button. And there we are, another great episode, and I am very thankful to you for joining me. This was the longest episode yet, and I hope you would agree, the best episode yet. Longer is better, is it not? And I hope to see you again very soon, long before another month is up. Copyright 2012, Art Howard.
Art Howard at Night is performed live before a recorded audience at One Podcast Place, located on top of the Peachtree Plaza Hotel in Atlanta, Georgia. Art's apparel is provided by High Roots, the big tall place. All in-studio guests stay at the Ritz-Carlton Buckhead. All guests to Art Howard at Night fly Eastern Airlines. Our fly is open, and it shows. I'm Brian Clark. Good night.